Hang about. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, how you doing, Laura?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm heading into my birthday tomorrow, so...
Oh, happy birthday, happy pre-birthday.
Happy pre-birthday. And then my producer Ben's just had his birthday on Monday, so we're having a birthday week together.
Oh, it's party time. See you
then. That's what we try to do. It's we have a lot of May birthdays for some reason, so there's like cake constantly throughout the month.
Hey, no, look, you're not the only one. I'm going on Sunday evening to a birthday gathering for three birthdays, so three people all clustered together. So what's it about May?
I have no idea. I don't know why anyone's having babies in May, but maybe it's got to do, no, I'm not going to do that math. Let's move on, shall we? Yeah, I think so. Well, the abortion debate has come up, risen its head again in Parliament. Now, the debate around abortion being removed from the Crimes Act is a conscience issue for National, as I'm aware. And I'm wondering where you fall on the issue.
Yeah, so you're right that abortion's been, you know, on the wire on the topic this week, but it hasn't come up in Parliament, though.
Mm.
So I guess that's part of the misnomer that's circling around. There's been quite a lot of discussions coming out of America. And what some of the states are doing over there. And I think that's just kick-started things again here.
Yeah.
But there is actually no legislation before us in Parliament. So it's hard for me to take a position on legislation that we haven't seen. So I wouldn't have a clue. If the government is going to produce something, how far will they go? What is it? What was it? Is it just solely trying to move it out of the Crimes Act and into a health type? Or are they going to go then and look at, lots of the rules and regulations around it? We just don't know. The only thing that's happened so far is Andrew Little asked the Law Commission to research into the topic, and then they came up with three options. That's all we know so far. Mm.
But I am curious, though, just on a personal level, where you fall, if this was just a matter of it being removed from the Crimes Act, if it wasn't going to be a criminal offence, would you sign on to that?
You know, look, I'm definitely open to discussion about removal from the Crimes Act, because
mm-hmm.
for me, that's not the bigger issue. The bigger issue for me is that I wouldn't want it to see it abortion becoming significantly more permissive than it is today. So, in other words, I think that the status quo is working quite well. We all want to see abortions rare and safe. That's the best for everyone. So, where it's housed, you know, I do get the argument about it coming out of the Crimes Act. And I do also understand that some of the language in the current laws feels a bit outdated. But I'm not in favour of large-scale change. And look, I don't know whether that would be what the government suggests. We'll have to wait and see.
I think on that subject of it wanting it to be rare in the current state it is, shouldn't it be a matter of it happening as often as it needs to happen?
Yeah, no, you're right. But why? No one wants to have an abortion,
no.
Right, Laura? So what do we do? I'd like the discussion to be shifted to contraception.
Mm.
You know, how are we funding that? Do we need to fund it more? What's about awareness, education? So why do we have to talk about a procedure that no one wants to have? And let's talk about how to avoid getting there in the first place.
But for some people,
so when I talk about rare, that's what I mean. I mean, let's give women the ability to not have to face the option at all.
Mm. I guess this subject always raises a lot of different problems, particularly with the way it stands currently. So people having to get a psychological assessment from two different doctors in order to be able to get approved for an abortion. And then that has reaching effects for people in the regions who may only have one doctor in their area. This creates kind of a wider systemic problem when it is in the Crimes Act and regulated the way it is.
Well, I mean, access to medical professional opinion, I think that is just like the discussion around contraception. I think mm-hmm. those are two really valid things that we should talk about. Personally, I really want to retain the safeguard for women requiring and valuing medical professional opinion.
Mm.
So if it's not readily available, then absolutely we should do better for that.
Yeah. One of the comments made this week from a national MP for, so that was Alfred Narro, he said having abortion in the Crimes Act does not make women feel like criminals. I find it kind of odd that a man is speaking on behalf of all women, but can you explain some of the logic behind that comment?
No, because I think you have to talk to Alfred. Mm. Alfred wouldn't want me to explain him. Mm. Yeah, so that's best asked with him. And because it is a conscience vote, Laura, you know, we literally are expressing our own opinions.
Yeah, of course. Do you think, though, on a personal level, that having it in the Crimes Act would make a woman feel like a criminal?
Well, I guess it'd be hard to tell. To be honest, I haven't had that conversation with other women.
Mm.
You know, especially those who I know have had an abortion, whether the where it sat in legislation was something that occurred to them or that they felt, you know. For women that I know have had an abortion, they, you know, they interfaced with medical professionals in a professional capacity.
Mm.
So, you know, I personally have not come across someone who expressed, you know, I guess, concern around the criminal or crime side of things. So, you know, look, and again, I'm open to that discussion. I'm not discounting the fact that it might not be sitting in the right place.
Mm. I guess in regards to the comment made by Alfred, while I know it's important for you not to speak on his behalf, I guess with him in mind having those religious beliefs, a very strong religious background, that religious background seems to have come into play impacting his way moving in politics. Why do you think it is justifiable for religious beliefs to compromise people's bodily autonomy?
Well, it's more than probably. I don't think you can say that religious beliefs compromise anything. It's simply their beliefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and we have freedom of expression, we have freedom of belief. We are free to think any way that we want to here in New Zealand. We're in an open democracy. So if Alfred's background and what he holds dear and his journey, and he would probably say his mana, brings him to the point where he feels this way about abortion and life and his drivers, then he's free to think that way. And I think we should safeguard and protect his freedom to think that way.
Mm.
Now, lots of people may disagree,
yeah.
And lots of people may agree, but he still can think that way. It's his choice.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. I'm going to shift on to bullying in Parliament. So we've had the report come out from, I believe it was Denise Francis or Francis?
Debbie Francis.
Debbie Francis, that's what it was. Now, yes, another personal side of this. Have you ever felt bullied in Parliament or felt like there's an atmosphere of bullying in Parliament?
No, I haven't. And as you know, I've only been there 18 months, and I can honestly say, no, I haven't. But when you read that report, clearly some have. So that's good enough for me. You know, we obviously need to look at continuous improvement. Parliament's a funny place, Laura. It's really, I'll just use the word robust, and a very demanding environment. It's actually quite surreal when you get to Wellington. So as much as I adore and love my patch in Auckland and you know, staying grounded locally, You've also got to get to Wellington in what we call the bubble, and it is very long days. Things are often reactive, and I can see how a stressful environment has not worked well for some people. And so, you know, continuously improving, making sure that we have, you know, there's some examples in that report that where we need to do better. The code of conduct, upgraded HR, better reporting around HR, you know, even a helpline and an independent person to run and investigate complaints. All these suggestions I think are really good. Bottom line for me is, you, me, anyone who goes to work has a right to be safe.
I guess something I'm actually asking our listeners today on our poll position question, I might just ask you myself, but my question today for the viewers has been, or listeners, does the nature of parliamentary politics lead to an environment of bullying? So what do you think about that?
I don't think it does. It could. And that's because, you know, by nature, it's adversarial.
Yeah.
So we're contesting big ideas of the day, and contesting can take the form of debating, and sometimes debating really vigorously. And so, you know, for some people, competitiveness can turn into, well, quite frankly, nastiness.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I can understand why people would take things personally and not let it go, but they need to. It's as simple as that. You know, at the end of the day, I won't be a politician forever. And when I walk away, I and any one of my colleagues on all sides of the House needs to ask ourselves, did our character, do we arrive at the place with our character there? Did it stay intact? And we put when we leave. And we sometimes we need to work hard on that, and that relates to us with staff, staff with staff, so at all levels. Look, I think you're raising a really good point here, and the bottom line is, by nature, Parliament is hurly-burly, rough and tumble, so we've got to work harder at that not becoming a culture.
Now, in addition to this, some very serious allegations were raised within the report of some sexual assaults. And I guess I'm curious, do you think Parliament is a place where people can feasibly report this kind of behaviour to police without concerns for their job?
Well, I'd like to think that's what we've got right now, but I'd say after that Francis review that we've got room for improvement.
Mm.
So, you know, just even on the day that was announced and the way the Speaker handled it, the whole thing was pretty chaotic, right?
Yeah.
Some things were said that had poor timing, in my opinion. So this is a chance for us to say, right, if there's something really wrong going on, what are the reporting lines? Is there, you know, an easy helpline or an easy portal that I can go to? You know, it was really interesting for me that the announcement of this review set off a sort of a chaotic response. And just demonstrating the very fact that we need to tighten some things up.
And then on to our last subject for the day, government reducing their debt target. And, you know, I love talking economics, so should be fun. So do you think it's important for government to be reducing its debt target and giving more leeway to what they can borrow?
Yeah, well, look, we don't even need to take reducing the debt targets. We'd take just not lifting them.
Mm.
You know, that's no one was even talking about requiring the government to look at reducing. We're just totally shocked that they've lifted them. Mm. But the last Labor government took two terms. That's 6 years to lose fiscal discipline the way that this government has. This government's taken 18 months. So it was honestly nothing short of a shock that they announced sort of randomly, erratically, that they're lifting the debt limit by 5%. That is tens of billions of dollars of extra debt that future generations will have to pay for.
But I think most economists that I have heard from on the subject have said it's not particularly shocking or concerning to them that the target has changed. It's more about the quality of expenditure and where that money could be going, and it's a good time to be investing. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I would also be one to say that raising quality debt for really good issues and topics is not something that we should be afraid of.
Yeah.
But what kind of surplus did this government inherit? A massive surplus. And so what they've done in the last 18 months is basically overpromise and get cracking on poor spending choices. It is really beggars belief that a time when New Zealand economy was looking good and it was in good shape, that this has happened just 18 months down the track. So, and the economy is slowing as well. So when you've got a whole, you know, raft of a slowing economy, over-promising on different policies and poor spending choices, provincial growth fund for one, Kiwi Build in the way that that's not panning out, why are we going in this kind of environment where what we should be doing is paying down debt? Why are we doing this?
So why, I guess, in terms of the provincial growth fund, I think that that's kind of an important thing to have in place in order to stimulate economies in the regions. Why do you think that's poor spending?
Well, because it's not coughing up the results. So it's poor spending right now because we're not seeing the results.
But
so,
I mean,
for a start off, it's underspent. The fund hasn't even been spent like it was promised. And, you know, I'd love to see what the results are.
But the spending hasn't even...
We've got controversy everywhere.
The spending hasn't even... The money hasn't even been spent, is what you just said, but you're saying that it's poor spending, so that doesn't really make sense there.
Well, let me just clarify, the money hasn't been spent. I don't know the actual figure off the top of my head, but by this stage of the game, Shane Jones himself promised that X amount of dollars would be spent because, you know, in other words, to demonstrate that there are so many fantastic projects and it's such a worthwhile fund that people would be knocking down the doors and there'd be success. But he himself has had to admit in the House that at this stage of the spending program, that not all the money has been allocated. So there's a real mismatch there for what is supposed to be, you know, the big answer to the provinces versus the slow you know, poorly allocated spend so far. I'd be happy if we want to talk about this next week. I'll come with some of those figures. Let's do it.
Okay. No, I'm ready to have a look at the figures.
Have a TGS discussion.
Absolutely. I'm actually keen for that. Let's do that next week.
Okay. Sold.
Awesome. Well, I'll just end off on my final question, as I like to do, my personal question. So as I mentioned before, it's Ben and I's birthday week, and so I'm wondering, what is your...
You don't want me to sing happy birthday, do you?
Hey, if you're willing, I'll take it.
Hey, what was that question again?
Okay, question for the day. What's your favorite flavor of cake?
You know, you can't... I think you mentioned the word before I got on air, velvety. You can't go past a nice, good old chocolate, velvety, rich, dense, dark piece of chocolate cake. It's just, you know, I know it's go-to. Hey, it's not vanilla and it's not fancy-smancy red velvet. It's just good old chocolate. That's for me.
Oh, I can't handle a piece of cake like that.
You don't like cake?
Oh, I only like a very specific kind of cake. It's a black forest cake that you get from the cheesecake shop. The only thing I can handle because it's very light. If I get a dense chocolate cake, I will feel sick for the rest of the day.
Okay, well, can I have your piece of dense chocolate mud cake?
Absolutely, you can have my piece. We'll be talking with you next week, Denise.
Great, thanks, Laura. See you.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.